afternoon. This is Gail Sylvia, your host of SylviaGlobal.com. I am so excited today to have with me a very special guest joining us here live in New York, Sri Lankan Tamil blood, Manchester born, Texas bred, and Brooklyn steeped, Yalini Dream is a performance artist, activist, and facilitator. She conjures spirits through her unique blend of poetry, theater, song, and dance, reshaping reality and seeking peace through justice in the lands of earth, psyche, soul, and dream. One of the Sri Lankan diaspora's most prominent dissident performing artists, Yalini Dream, has toured nationally at hundreds of spaces throughout the U.S. and as well as Europe and South Asia. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, Yalini Dream. Thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much, Gail, for having me on the show.
Oh, it's an honor. It's quite an honor. So we're here in New York, and tell us the meaning of your name.
So Yalini, it refers to Yalpanam. Yalpanam is the Tamil name for Jaffna. That's the area that my parents grew up in Sri Lanka. And it literally means, the Yal is the lute, which is a stringed instrument that Jaffna, the Yalpanam, was famous for. So Yalpanam actually means land of the lute. And then ini is a suffix that means sweet. It's like short for sugar. So my name means sweet lute. But it also conjures a romantic notion for a cultural pride as well. Yalini is a very Sri Lankan Tamil name, and my parents named me that when they still believed in the liberation of our people. And so there's a bittersweetness to my name growing up, because the war was so heart-wrenching and really destroyed those dreams of liberation. And so for me, being Yalini Dream, I'm redreaming, I'm opening those dreams, evolving those dreams of a better world, not just a just peace in Sri Lanka, but for all of our peoples throughout the planet.
Was this your birth name, or did you adopt this name as you grew wiser and more experienced and knowledgeable about the history and the meaning and of it?
Well, Yalini was a name that was the name that my parents gave me. I also had a Christian name as well. And a dream was a name that I took on as I came into more spiritual and political consciousness. Though it was always, the idea of dreams was something that I was very much aware of ever since I was a child. I used to have dreams that would sometimes reflect the future, and my mother has psychic abilities, and people would come to her in her dreams and be able to reflect the future. And so I've always been I've always had a very strong relationship to dreams. And then even being an artist, I really wanted, it took courage for me to dream a life that I hadn't been shown the path of how to be an artist. I had to dream that for myself. And then also being a political activist, having the courage to dream of a new world. So it was a name that sometimes people called me or said when they saw me dance and perform. They said it was like a dream. And then sometimes people called me Dream as a nickname. And then I eventually took it on as a spiritual and political name for myself.
You know, you shared with me that your brother once told you that you started this artist life to pick the path with your heart and travel it with your head. What did he mean by that?
When we were young, you know, I think also because there were so many people in my community who didn't have a lot of opportunities, and myself being raised in the U.S. and having certain access to education and so many privileges that so many people in our community just were, you know, if you're in the midst of war, your education was interrupted and all of these things. So I think what a lot of people in my family and immediate community had wanted for me was to be something professional where I could concretely give back to my community. I definitely wanted to give to my community, but I felt a calling towards being an artist, and that path wasn't clear. And it was a little scary and intimidating, but my brother affirmed in me to pick that path with my heart and to use my intellectual skills, my mind, to navigate and carve this path that I may not fully understand yet.
Is your brother older or younger than you?
He's actually younger than me.
Yeah. Isn't that something, how wisdom comes that way when we're open to us? When we're open to it, it can come. We often associate it with age and experience, but I think it's really a place of the heart, you know, where those who are in tune and listen are able to bring wise advice and insight to us regardless of their birthplace, you know, and their age. Talk to us about the courage to dream. You just made reference that it took courage to dream.
Absolutely. I mean, I think when we're children, hopefully we have the opportunity to just be open and free to the energies. We're close to the source of our to birth. And but I think it's interesting to me when I would go to a kindergarten class and ask, who's an artist? Everybody would raise their hand and say, me, 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 me. And then I go to a fifth grade class, who's an artist? And maybe, you know, like a quarter of the class would raise their hand. And then I'd go to, you know, seniors in high school and ask, who's an artist? And there'd be only one or two students that raised their hand. And I think a similar thing happens with dreaming as well. As young people, when we become more familiar with the realities of this world, and often that comes through the realities of also classism, racism, sexism, ableism, and bigotry, exploitation, violence, people need to find concrete strategies to navigate the world. How do they bring resources into their lives, into their families? How do you protect yourself? How do you make sure that you're secure and safe when there's so many negative forces in this world that that interrupt the growth of a sovereign soul? And I think it becomes really scary to listen to our spirit and actually dream big. It's almost heartbreaking if you allow yourself to dream and those dreams don't come through true. I've seen what broken dreams have done to a community, and like for so many Sri Lankan Tamils who really believed in the empowerment and liberation of our community and then saw our communities actually fold on top of ourselves, and the perfection of suicide bombers, and then the end of war happening in such a horrific, violent way, just the courage to actually dream is so powerful, and it can feel out of people's reach, but it's so necessary for us.
How were you able to preserve your courage to dream?
That's a great question. I think it's extremely important for us to mourn our sorrows. I think that even if our sorrows seem small in comparison to others, I think it's important that we give ourselves the space to embrace sadness and suffering, and to use it as an opportunity to deepen our empathy and understanding and connections with other people. I think when we collect our sorrows and don't address them, then we have less room to listen to other people's sorrows, but then also to listen to our own needs. When we embrace sadness, it can teach us what are our deeper desires, what is it that our spirit is calling us to do, and what are our and how can we dream for a way to for us to meet those spiritual needs and desires. So I think that's one thing that is extremely important. And then the other is to carve out space in my life for my creativity. I mean, my life is an artistic path, but I think for those who aren't career artists, I think it's still very important for us to give ourselves space for creativity and to cultivate that in our lives.
It nourishes our soul, you know, to create a space to nurture our dreams and our creativity. I find that when I become the most restless and unclear in my intentions and my work or my day, that pausing long enough to admire the good that's around us and the beauty that's around us that God has created, it puts me in a place of beginning to reconnect and acknowledge what I'm able to create and why creating and dreaming is so fulfilling for accomplishing even bigger, tasks beyond just the dream. So, you know, as an example, a simple act of just writing in a journal, you know, or baking for some people, or for me it's collaging, doing collages. That creative process nurtures my soul and my spirit and restores my strength. Is that an experience that you continue to have or have experienced that explains why you are a career artist and a lifelong committed dreamer?
Absolutely. I think you articulated that so well. It takes resilience to be a career artist, especially during these economic times, and especially when there's so many forces telling us that it's impractical. And I think about young people who are just graduating high school or college during these economic times, and you know, choosing to be an artist may seem like one of the most impractical things. And I think that we have to have lots of different strategies, and so many working artists do have other jobs that supplement their incomes, and that doesn't make you any less of an artist as long as you're committed to your craft. But I think that what provides me with that resilience is that space for spiritual reflection, for connection, and for dreaming and creativity, and it keeps us young as well.
Yes, it does. You know, one of my favorite quotes by you is when you said, "One of the cruelest things fear ever did was kidnap dream from reality." What was happening at the time that you wrote those words?
Well, that's actually an excerpt from, well, that line actually came first, and then the play is in creation. It's a play called To Kiss a Wound, and it follows the metaphoric journey of fear kidnapping dream from reality, and then reality, back in the day, dream and reality were one, but
yes.
Then when fear kidnaps dream from reality, reality is heartbroken and runs away from that pain, cannot stand that pain of abandonment, and runs away to earth, and is so, you know, can't stand the trees anymore because it reminds them of dream, can't stand the earth and the dirt and the soil anymore, and is just like, pave over this earth and meet my new friend, greed. And the journey up to kiss a wound is how humans on Earth come to embrace a new reality that's shaped by dream rather than greed. So we go through and we see how what happens to the human when reality is shaped by greed and the exploitations and the ways in which people become imprisoned, and then how dream is able to seep through them and how they're able to combat greed and reclaim a new reality.
Another quote from you that I also respect so much is when you say, "War was born from rotting wounds left unkissed."
Mm-hmm. So that's actually from my body of work. So To Kiss a Wound is actually the next evolution of a body of work called Wounds Unkissed, which I did specifically about Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka was triple colonized by the Dutch, the Portuguese, and the British, and then has been in a 3-decade-long war that was really horrific. And I started writing it because I wanted to look at the LTTE, which was the insurgent group that was supposed to be representing my people, ended up doing some really horrific things. So did the Sri Lankan government. But, you know, I wanted to start by looking at my own community and how my community ended up producing a group that ended up perfecting the suicide bomber, assassinating our own people. And in trying to stand up against a bigoted force, which the Sri Lankan government was, they themselves became bigoted against our own people and exploitative and violence against our own people. And as I asked these questions, how did this happen? I realized that there was wound after wound after wound that had been left unkissed. And so I started to think of war as, what if war was a young woman? What if war was somebody I knew? You know, what created her? Why did she come into existence? And how can I understand this? And that's where this idea of war was born from rotting wounds left unkissed was birthed. And it's something that I think isn't just applicable to a political situation. I think it's when we see this in our intimate lives as well. So often, the legacy of violence is inherited by the next generation, even young people who grow up in the diaspora. And this isn't something that we just see within the Sri Lankan community. I think we see this in a lot of different communities that have survived violence. The vibration of that violence can pass on from generation to generation. And we need, in healing ourselves, sometimes we're healing generations of pain. That's where that quote, that idea comes from. And I constantly remind myself of that. Even as I try to untie and unlearn, I feel like there's even violence within myself. And I have to be in a constant evolution of untying that, understanding where is this, what is the pain that causes my thoughts to go in certain directions. And in doing that, I believe that I can connect with people in a deeper, loving, kinder way.
Define community, Yalini Dream, for you, because you've, in some people's mind, we think of community as just the immediate environment that we live within. Others expand it to be the environment outside of where we reside, but the places that we connect and place geographical boundaries on it. And then others see cultural communities and expand that into the global context. How do you define it?
I actually define it as all of those. I see myself as a member of multiple communities. And I used to say when I was younger, in my work, I used to say, who would love my people, right? And I think I was very specific about Sri Lankan Tamil people, and I was very specific about the war. But I've realized that that's one of my communities, and even within the Sri Lankan Tamil communities, there's multiple communities. And so now I really believe in a much more pluralistic sense of community, and I think of it as our people. And to me, that recognizes the diversity within community, but it also recognizes the solidarity between communities. I do think that the struggles that you see within the many communities in Sri Lanka is something that resonates for many different communities throughout the world. And so I also consider myself part of a community here in Brooklyn, New York, which has multiple diasporas. And I've been living on the same block in Bed-Stuy for 12 years, and I do consider this also one of the communities that I participate in and I'm a member of. I find myself part of artistic communities, spiritual communities. I think you actually articulated it very well. There are so many different forms of communities, and I see myself as a member of many of them.
Talk to us some more about the history and the current issues that the Sri Lankan Tamil people face. I know that MIA is gained a lot of prominence and brought attention, attention to the traumas and the history and the life of the Tamil people, but can you give us some more insight and also share with us how much time you've actually spent there and how often you are there physically connecting with the people there?
Sure, thank you. This interview is very timely because tomorrow actually marks 3 years since the end of the civil war in Sri Lanka, which should be something we should be able to celebrate. But unfortunately, the way the end of the war happened was extremely violent, traumatic. It was a bloody military offensive, and so many lives were lost in many horrific ways. And many communities, the Tamil community, as well as the Sinhala community, as well as the Muslim community in Sri Lanka, are all still reeling from the pain from that. And unfortunately, there hasn't been a lot of moves made by the government in power to truly heal those wounds or reconcile that. And so, again, when we see wound after wound left unkissed, a just peace cannot be fully attained. And though there are so many wonderful people from all different communities in Sri Lanka who are trying their best to, and are doing that, are creating peace and reconciliation through their everyday actions as well as through their organizing and art making. There are many different communities in Sri Lanka. There's a community of African descent in Sri Lanka. There's the Muslim community, which is Tamil speaking, but ethnically identifies, self-identifies as Muslim. There's the Verde community, which is an indigenous community in Sri Lanka whose land has also been taken away from them and whose language and culture is also facing extinction. There's the Berger community, who identifies as descendants of the Dutch and the Portuguese. And then there's the Sinhalese community, which is the majority in Sri Lanka. And there are many people from all of those different communities who coexist. Oh, there's also a community, again, of Tamils who are Tamil-speaking, but who actually came from India by the British to work the tea plantations in Sri Lanka. And the war was primarily, was framed as something that was between the Sri Lankan Tamils, which were the largest ethnic minority, and the Sri Lankan government, and it was often framed as something that was Sinhalese versus Tamil. But I want to be clear that the warring parties, the government and the LTTE, didn't necessarily represent the people they claimed to represent, and that people on the ground often acted different from the military arms that were enacting the violence and the war. They often used people and exploited people, and even the horrific things that were done by soldiers were done by young people who had no other options but to go into the military, and their lives were threatened if they didn't follow command. So right now, unfortunately, even though the war has ended, all minority communities in Sri Lanka are still looking for increased political power and representation for their community voices to be heard, and the space for civil society to be able to engage and sometimes even just have arguments, to be able to express a difference of opinion. And unfortunately, dissident voices are still being silenced in Sri Lanka. And this is dangerous for the entire country. We need dissent. We need people. That's what's necessary for pluralistic societies with multiple communities in order to actually coexist. We also need within our communities to be able to disagree, and then we also need to be able to disagree with each other. We need to be able to have public dialogue. But there are a lot of different things that threaten that, including the disappearances of political activists, organizers, community members, people who just were speaking about their own experience during the war. And unfortunately, there's also been violence, communal violence between religious communities, and a lot of people taking advantage of people's desperation to push their own political agendas. And so what is necessary right now is for people to be able to express their sovereign voices, to have safety and security, and to have increased political power within the country. And there needs to be healing. There needs to be space for people to talk explicitly about the injustices that all the communities have faced in Sri Lanka, and talk about that openly and try to move towards true reconciliation.
Are you there? Have you been able to perform there very often?
I traveled to Sri Lanka on a study and travel grant from the Jerome Foundation in 2010 and 2011. And much of what I was doing was actually learning. But I also, as I learned, I shared my work. And so I went to war-affected areas. I learned about what people had experienced. I also was in the South and spoke to and listened to many different communities who weren't necessarily, who were still impacted by the war but weren't necessarily in the war zones or in the conflict areas. So I talked to people inside and outside of conflict areas. And I performed at university spaces as well as NGO spaces, as well as closed community spaces, and from everywhere, from people's homes to more established stages. The current context is complicated in Sri Lanka, and I definitely have a lot of privilege as somebody who is raised in the diaspora, and I believe that you have to use privilege as a tool, as a sword, and not just as a shield to protect ourselves, but as something that privilege needs to be used as a tool that carves space for other people's voices and to be able to amplify other people's voices. And then it's also interesting because the way the diaspora has been pitted against the local population throughout the war is also contributes to tensions. And I think it's very important for me as somebody who was raised in the diaspora to learn about what's happening to people on the ground, and then also be in conversation with people in the diaspora, because we do have so much power, because we have access to Western media, to resources, and our voices are sometimes heard more. If you live in the U.S., your voice is sometimes heard more than if you live in Sri Lanka, if you live in England, if you live in Canada, if you live in Western countries. Though we have many people in the diaspora who are in refugee camps in India and other parts of the world whose voices are just as silenced, right? So even within the diaspora, there's this dynamic of power and privilege. And I think that one of my roles is to learn, listen, and then also to catalyze conversation, dialogue, and open that within the diaspora, so that we have deeper solidarity with the communities who are living these experiences every day in Sri Lanka.
You know, you challenge the notion of what seems impossible. What, in closing, and I truly hope that Yalini dream that you will come back and be a regular guest here on Sylvia Global, because the message that you're sharing about this notion of belief in ourselves and in peace and justice through the performing arts, you know, is a message of encouragement, not only for listeners who have access to it because of life in the United States or other Western worlds, but is a message that can empower and inspire others who have faced, you know, genocidal environments, who are recovering from the deep, deep wounds of war that have been left unkissed. Give us, in closing, your words of inspiration and advice in answer to this question. In your, you know, in your grandest, wildest of dreams, your life will help accomplish what on behalf of your mission and challenging the seemingly impossible?
I believe that we are all meant to shine, and that light magnifies light, and it's not light that holds another in shadow. So I want to shine as bright as I can, allow my sovereign soul to be all that it can be, and in doing so, catalyze others to shine, to step into their own power. Because if all of our souls are able to shine and connect, I think that we could begin to dream, imagine, envision, live, and manifest an alternative to the global destruction that we are facing currently.
it's the first step in creating new realities.
Absolutely.
You know, is to dream. Yolani Dream, where will you be performing over the next, upcoming months?
Sure. Well, tonight I'm actually performing at a fundraiser for Private Danny Chen, who was a young man who died outside of combat in Afghanistan and was the victim of bullying from his own squad. And so we're supporting the family as they push for more transparency from the military. So many young people offer their lives to the military because they believe that it's an alternative for their own lives and that they're actually, committed to something, to creating a better world, and then find themselves victims of violence. And I think we've heard a lot of veterans who have come home talk about how about the violence that they even experienced within the military. There's a high rate of sexual violence as well within the military. And then also when they come home, they don't receive the support that they need. And then I'll be performing at a number of different events. I'll actually be in Kelly's Anissa, Say You Heard My Echo, which she's another guest who will be on this show. So listen to her.
Yeah,
she'll tell you more about that project.
We're looking forward to it.
And then I'll also be performing in Toronto and D.C. Over the next few months. So if you're in any of those cities, you can catch me there.
Yolani Dream, thank you so much for joining us today here on Sylvia Global. This broadcast is available at sylviaglobal.com and also can be found on iTunes as a podcast. How can listeners support you, and where can they contact you?
Sure. You can find me at yalinidream.com and email me at yalinidream@gmail.com. And I'm on Facebook as well. So
thank you so much. Wonderful having you here today. God bless.
God bless. Thank you.